You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide, in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Emily Chang.
I'm Emily Chang in San Francisco, and this is Bloomberg Technology. Coming up in the next hour, Robinhood is launching an index of the top stocks traded on its platform. Will that drive more retail investors to it? We're going to ask a top Robinhood exec. Plus, NBA champion Andre Iguodala talks to us about what he's taking from the court to venture capital. My conversation with the basketball star about everything from diversity in tech to NFTs and sports betting. And we all know about Bored Apes, but what about Moonbirds? Is that one new to you? We are talking to Proof Collective's Kevin Rose about the future of NFTs. All of that in a moment, but first, Robinhood announcing a new index. This will offer a snapshot, a monthly snapshot of the top 100 stocks its users are holding with the most quote-unquote conviction. The company says customer conviction in a stock will be measured by how highly concentrated it is across portfolios. Robinhood's head of investment strategy, Stephanie Guild, joins us now. So talk to us about the methodology behind this, Stephanie, and the end goal.
Yeah, I think, you know, we brought in a whole new generation of investors, or we helped do that, right? Over 20 million investors. And with it came a narrative that wasn't fair. Our investors are not just meme stockholders. And so when we looked through the data, we saw that there was actually a lot of really interesting themes, and they are holding on to, or investing in things that are things that you and I might invest in for the long term. And so we wanted to bring that narrative and be able to show it to not only the world, but also give information to our customers about it.
So some of the top stocks are some of the things that we think of as quote-unquote meme stocks. What do you think has been unfair about the discussion about what's traded on Robinhood's platform?
Well, I think when you also look at the other ones, right, you've got Amazon, Apple, Google's been at the top. There's a lot of companies that are in our daily lives, and that's no different than generations of investors have been investing in, right? Like the things that you know and use every day. I think the other thing is that you when you look through a lot of the data below the top 10, what you do see is, for example, a theme of investing in electric vehicles. And if this year has not shown you anything about the importance of adopting electric vehicles over time, I don't know what couldn't.
How do you expect investors to use the data from this index?
I think for them, it's just a way to say, like, what are investors or customers or people like me investing in? What are, you know, how are they positioned relative to me? And right now, it's just going to be a snapshot on a monthly basis, but there may be other ways that we can offer it to our customers to help inform them in the future.
Right. That was my next question. I mean, could we see a you know, weekly, daily, hourly list of the top 10 or top 100?
I don't know if it's going to be updated that often, but I think we could in the future potentially bring it in app, for example, and share it with our customers. If you own that particular stock, you'll see maybe perhaps what the weighting of that stock is in our own index, and maybe even compare your performance to it.
You mentioned electric cars. Talk to us about some of the other early data that you're seeing. What are you learning about investors from this data?
I think other things I've seen over time, especially when we look back at the history of the index, it goes back to about January 2020, is that our customers have been relatively good at timing some of the more tactical things that have been out in the market. For example, in you know, in COVID, they were investing in the Pelotons, for example, and the Zooms. That has dissipated quite a bit. They were investing in mortgage companies. You know, when interest rates were super low, and you know, the housing boom was happening. They were investing in the likes of Rocket and Wells Fargo. A lot of that stuff has dissipated in the index, and what they're investing in is, I'd say, stuff that's sort of longer term for the future. A lot of, for example, financial services companies are not necessarily, you know, all the banks that have been around forever. It's a lot of some of the new, you know, new ways that we might see finance evolve. And that's because our customers are, you know, 32 years old on average. And so they have time, and why not invest in things that, you know, longer term can help build wealth.
So why introduce this now at a time of a lot of uncertainty in the market, going into an economic downturn, and, you know, obviously a lot of questions about how the platform is used?
I think we wanted to do it because, one, as I said before, like, the narrative has been unfair. Our investors aren't just making, you know, crazy YOLO decisions. A lot of them have learned from this recent downturn and are turning their eye toward how can I build long-term wealth for myself. And our platform, you know, really helps you get started with that. And we want to grow with our customers. And having this information available to us and being able to track it can also help us understand our customers better and give them what they need over time.
All right. Stephanie Guild, Robinhood's head of investment strategy. We'll continue to track those now that they're out. Thank you for joining us.
Thank
to
you.
Explain. Coming up, how venture capitalists are changing their strategy amid a market downturn. That's next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks. Like generating an instant first draft in your company voice, or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stiefel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stiefel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stiefel.com. That's STIEFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
The economic downturn is slashing startup valuations, leading to smaller IPOs or no IPOs in some cases, and less venture capital activity. How long does it last? Amber Bhattacharya of Maverick Ventures, Managing Director, joining us now. Amber, how long do you think it lasts? I've heard 2 to 3 years for this downturn.
Well, great to be on the show, Emily. Thanks for having me. I wish I had that crystal ball in terms of how long it will last, but we're certainly in the middle of it now. I think that the catalysts have been, you know, the raising of the interest rates. I think part of the bubble being popped that we were in last year. But I think it also presents an opportunity for a lot of startups, particularly ones that have good balance sheets, ones that actually have great unit economics. And I think that's where a lot of folks are focusing now is, you know, are there real fundamentals that are driving business progress? And that's where I think the attention has shifted away from high growth, high burn, and other things that were really being funded last year.
So I've heard massive layoffs coming, valuation write-downs. What we've seen so far isn't the least of it. Would you agree?
I think it started. I think in the beginning of the year, there was a big wait-and-see attitude. You know, would this be a temporary blip? Would the market snap back really fast? I think in the second half of the year, particularly post-summer, I think reality is setting in. I think we have seen many startups take down their burn rate, both in terms of layoffs, contractors, real estate costs, things of that sort. I think secondly, we've seen a lot of companies shore up their balance sheets. And while they do that, they're saying, hey, you know, the path towards profitability is now much more important than the path towards higher growth. I think third thing, and you mentioned valuations, I think there's a reality setting in that oftentimes for maybe not the top companies, but for the average startup, there's a reality check on the market. And I think what we're seeing there is for a lot of companies that are good companies with good unit economics and good fundamentals, they're saying, hey, we want to raise a more modest amount of money at a more modest valuation than last year. And that's a great path. But for companies that need money, need capital, I think that's where you're starting to see valuation declines, structure for deals and things of that sort.
Is there a lot of dry powder just sitting on the sidelines because of all these funds that raise so much money and now don't have as many places to deploy it? And are VCs waiting for valuations to fall further before getting in?
There is a lot of dry powder. I think that's when you talk to a lot of investors in the private equity space and in the venture capital space, a lot of folks were very fortunate to have raised in the last few years. The pace of capital deployment has slowed down. I think there's two things that are happening right now, and I'll bifurcate the early stage market and the growth equity markets. In the early stage market, I think business there has continued, as expected. There's great innovation happening out of a lot of scientific labs, out of a lot of engineers who are leaving other startups, leaving the big corporations who have their ideas. And that just continues at the normal pace. And there's lots of research saying that in these moments of economic downturn are the time that more resilient companies are being built. And so that's one thing we've seen. I think on the other hand, for more of the kind of the growth equity, growth stage companies, I think you are seeing, the pace slow down there. I think people want to see better fundamentals and unit economics than they saw before.
The hedge fund Tiger Global was such a big player in Silicon Valley over the last few years. It's also been blamed for inflating a lot of these valuations because they had a lot of money to deploy. What do you make of that criticism?
Well, I think, more broadly speaking, I think there was a lot of money in the ecosystem last year, whether it was from folks like Tiger or SoftBank or others. And what they did was, they played a very important role in financing these companies. Now, what remains to be seen is, the role that they will play and other growth equity players will play in terms of now getting these companies on a path towards profitability, on a path towards an IPO, maybe not in 2022, but in future years, and how they adjust their mindset, how they adjust the support that they're giving their portfolio companies, I think is going to be very telling, actually, in the coming years. And so we look forward to working with them and other investors in that realm to see, how do you build long-term sustainable businesses? That's the main goal.
Gary Tan, formerly of Initialized, who's been a guest on this show many times, has been tapped to run Y Combinator. And, of course, there have been many Y Combinator startups born in a downturn, like Airbnb, like Stripe. What do you think the future is of a accelerator like Y Combinator in a down market when there are other accelerators out there now, many other accelerators trying to do the same thing?
It's, the last 2 days have been the Y Combinator demo day. And so we've been, knee deep in looking at all the companies in there. We've had a very strong relationship with Y Combinator before. We think it's one of the crown jewels of global innovation. Every 6 months, there's, hundreds of companies that present, and you just have this feeling that there's within that realm, there's a couple of those that are going to be these enduring industry-defining companies. One of the things that we've noticed in this Y Combinator, batch from just the last couple of days, you can notice certain macro trends. And I think this gets to your question. One thing that we've gotten very excited about is the increased use of artificial intelligence in companies that are in Y Combinator. And I think that's at one of the forefronts of trends in the coming decade. And if you just, we ran the math earlier today about, what percentage of companies are using artificial intelligence to build in this Y Combinator batch. And between AI and machine learning, it's almost a quarter of companies are doing this. And if you compare this to even two years ago, that's a 300% growth of companies doing that. And the only time we've seen that before is, 8 to 10 years ago when you started seeing cloud companies and startups being built on the cloud. and you saw the growth of cloud computing, AWS and Google and Microsoft. And so when you come to think about Y Combinator, you start seeing these macro trends as well. And I think that's really what we're seeing there.
All right. Interesting stuff. Amber Bhattacharya, Maverick Ventures Managing Director. Amber, thank you for joining us. As we're entering a potentially lengthy economic downturn, I caught up with NBA champion and Mastery Ventures general partner Andre Iguodala about where he's placing his bets and how the macro environment is impacting his strategy. Take a listen.
For me personally, earlier stage, which is where I'm investing, about 80% of my time and resources, they haven't been affected as much. So if you look at, pre-CC Series A, they haven't been affected as much, whereas the growth stage has been some uncertainty. You've seen a lot of down rounds coming out as of late, and I think those have been affected more than any other sector. So where I'm at, the deals are still pretty hot. Everyone's trying to get in. You're placing your bets earlier. There's bigger returns, but there's also more risk. So for me, still full throttle and still chasing the earlier deals.
Now, at Mastery, I know you say you want to ensure diversity when it comes to investing, to governance, to talent. What does that look like to you, and how do you think you can personally influence it, given your success as an athlete?
I just think holding, companies like the aggregators, making sure that they're doing their duty into helping build the pipeline or just looking for the right talent. So what we've been able to do is identify a Black-founded talent search firm and using that firm to make sure that we're able to, build the right pipelines from, HBCUs, higher education institutions with the talent, and making sure that these companies are building the right culture is one thing to, hire minorities, but it's another thing to make sure those minorities are having success within that culture. So, you got to build the right culture so they can have success once they work there. We found that that's been an issue as well. So holding these companies accountable is one thing, and, building out, projections or building out, pillars to make sure that, this is what it should look like. This is the percentage of minorities that you should have within your companies throughout building your companies, as we're investing earlier and seeing them through and through.
I recently spoke to Serena Williams about her foray into venture capital investing, and she said that a lot of people look at her and think, I'm just doing this as a hobby, but really it's a passion. And when it comes to, what she can bring to the table from the court, she said, I like winning and I know how to win. What do you think you bring from the court to investing that's unique, that traditional Silicon Valley venture capitalists don't have?
Well, winning in there's similarities in terms of winning as the percentage of humans within the sport or with this just in competing. And I think athletes and venture capital investors, this is really hard to win. And it's only a small percent that win at a high clip. And Serena fits right into that. I feel like I've been fortunate enough to be around Steph Curry, so I fit into it as well. And for me, it's just identifying talent, identifying how to make best use of that talent. I've been in situations where I've been, the focal point of the organization. I've also been in a situation where I've been a sixth man and we've had success. And so understanding how the ego works, what I've learned throughout my journey in tech is, the ego is big in tech is the same way it's big in sports. And, you got some of the brightest founders and you got some of the brightest VCs, and there's battles in, stakeholders with the founders in terms of the direction of the company, and just being able to make sure that, all the egos are, thrown out the window and we're all on the same page. And how do we build a company efficiently, responsibly, with the consumer in mind as well?
You're also the co-host of a podcast called Point Forward, where you're interviewing top athletes, musicians, entrepreneurs. You've been making some waves. I believe Joe Lacob said, got in a little trouble with something he said on your podcast. I'm curious what trends you're seeing in the media landscape, given this new ability for people like yourself to just go straight to their audiences directly. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think sports, as you can see with some of these, you know, some of the TV deals and the rights to, you know, whether it's NFL, NBA, and then you just look at the deal the Big Ten did, was astronomical, you know, a great deal done by Kevin Warren over at who runs the Big Ten. And you're starting to see in these sports has become actual media companies with, you know, live sports being you can pretty much gauge what your viewership is going to be and how many eyeballs the advertisers can come across. And I feel like athletes are starting to understand their influence and being able to leverage their brands as well. And, you know, understanding that there's not just the financial side, but also the branding side of you going straight to the consumer, which is what streaming is. And you've been able to talk to your fan base and whether it's you're trying to monetize it or just build that base of fans. And, you know, that's what we talk about with Web3. That's what we talk about with NFTs and, you know, that direct to consumer part of the business coming into media and sports as well.
Prime Video will have exclusive streaming rights starting September 15th for Thursday Night Football, kicking off an 11-year, $13 billion deal that could forever alter the television landscape. This is the first time a streaming service has had exclusive rights to NFL games in the United States and a big challenge to major networks that have dominated sports for generations. Here to discuss is Bloomberg's Lucas Shaw, who wrote about this for Bloomberg's Big Take. So, Lucas, this is a huge deal. If you want to watch Thursday Night Football, you're going to have to go on to Amazon Prime Video. How many viewers is this going to drive for Prime, and is the bet going to be worth it?
Well, Amazon is estimating that in the first year, it'll probably attract about 12 million viewers a week. That's below what the typical Thursday night broadcast has attracted, but much higher than I think the number of people using Amazon on your average Thursday. I mean, the thing to remember for them is this is a very long-term bet. It's useful. It's, you know, they see football both as a benefit for their Prime members. It's the big reason they're spending billions of dollars on entertainment, and it becomes very hard for us to see if that number really pencils out. But it also could provide a huge boost to their advertising business, which has been one of the fastest growing sectors of the company. And, you know, football is the hottest property on television.
A $13 billion deal for 11 games a season. Is it worth it?
Well, Amazon is paying less than other broadcasters pay for football. I mean, that's the thing to remember here is that the price of sports rights has gotten absolutely ludicrous over the past several years. You know, I find it really hard to answer the is it worth it question with Amazon just because it feels like they're playing a different game than most of these other companies. You know, I think when a CBS Paramount buys football rights, the bet is that that show itself will probably lose money for them, but it brings so many people into CBS that it makes money for them overall. And without football, they would be far less valuable to the cable operators that need to carry the channel. It's not a perfect comparison, but it's a little bit similar to Amazon, where they're spending a lot of money to bring people into their ecosystem.
The problem is that if you want to watch any of these games on a streaming platform, it is kind of confusing. For example, I like baseball. On Friday nights, I have to go to Apple, but only on Friday nights, not on any other night. How does that confusion smooth out over the longer term when you have all of these different networks and then all of these different streaming platforms getting just smaller pieces of a much larger pie?
Well, first of all, I can't believe this is the first time I'm hearing that you're a baseball fan, because I'm a huge baseball fan, so this is just good information to have. But baseball is a lot more complicated than the
NFL.
Please
don't use it against me.
No, I wouldn't, other than the fact that you're probably a Giants fan, and that is bad for me. But
I'm an A's fan, Lucas, an Oakland A's fan. I like the Giants when the A's aren't playing them.
Football is a little bit easier than baseball. Baseball is on regional sports networks. It's on a bunch of different networks. you know, Thursday Night Football is only going to be on Amazon. There's a little bit of, you know, confusion in that if you're in a bar, you'll be watching DirecTV, but nobody's paying attention to how they're getting it. If you're in the market of the team playing, you may be able to watch it on local TV. But you're right that this requires a lot of marketing on Amazon's part. You know, they're not used to spending a ton of money to market their entertainment shows. They figure that people who are just sort of coming to Amazon anyways will watch the things that they have to offer. Because of how much money they've spent both on football and on their new Lord of the Rings show, they're starting to market in a way that they really haven't before. And the nice thing about it is this will be one of the first times where we get weekly viewership numbers. I think the first time, actually, where we get weekly viewership numbers from Amazon. So we'll be able to see real time each week how the viewership is and whether it's able to attract an audience that's comparable to TV. And that's what the NFL is going to want to know, right? They're making a big bet here. The NFL has only been available on linear networks for the most part for its history. And they've now given one of their flagship programs to a streaming service. It's the first time they've done that. It's really the first time a major sports league in the U.S. has done it. And it is a big test of sort of where we see the future of media going.
All right, Bloomberg's Lucas Shaw. You can check out Lucas's big take in Bloomberg Business Week. Obviously, a lot of evolving and moving parts here. I do want to get to some breaking news that is crossing the terminal now. Advisors for Elon Musk have apparently written to Twitter about a separate basis to end that deal, that, of course, $44 billion buyout deal that Musk is trying to walk away from. Musk saying, and his advisors saying, they became aware of facts that they believe serve as a basis for terminating that deal. This is coming in an amended 13D filing. We're going to continue to follow these headlines. They're just crossing the terminal now. But either way, an additional attempt for Elon Musk to get out of buying Twitter. Continuing our conversation on streaming now, I want to bring in George Pine, founder and CEO of Bruin Capital. Bruin has the rights to run NFL Game Pass worldwide for the league. So if you want to watch the Super Bowl in Hong Kong, London, or Brazil, it's through Game Pass. So, George, I know you were listening to our conversation with Lucas earlier. Some people are calling this, move towards more streaming platforms, having more sports rights, an inflection point, like an inflection point in broadcast history. Do you think it's fair to say that at this point or too soon?
Emily, thanks for having me. I think it's a little too soon to say that. I'd say they're around the hoop per se, but I don't think it's an inflection point. I think you're seeing more activity. I mean, Apple with NFL Plus, Amazon with the Thursday Night Football, Apple with Major League Soccer. But still, they're kind of not the major moves. No one's unseating Fox or CBS or the NBA or the NFL. So they're around the hoop in a way they haven't been before, but I wouldn't quite say it's an inflection point.
Okay, so how long do you think then that this land grab is going to take to play out? And what does it look like on the other side? Do streaming platforms have more power, more power over the sports that, so many millions of people want to watch? Or do the traditional networks hold on to a lot of that power?
Well, I think it's twofold. One, the money's in the old media, right? It's sports are the most valuable thing for old media. I mean, like 95 of the top 100 shows on television are sports, enormously valuable content. And I break the streamers into two groups. I mean, Paramount Plus, Peacock, and ESPN Plus, those are tied to linear television. And so that's an attempt where you're able to use both streaming and linear in a package. And it's quite different than Amazon and Apple, who are really using it, as Lucas said, almost as a sponsorship, a way to augment their other business. And so Amazon and Apple are quite different than Paramount Plus, ESPN Plus, and others like in Peacock. So there are two strategies. And, it's more seamless on the media side because that content's so valuable. And then on what I call the retail product side, it's still valuable, but it's valuable because it's really driving awareness to another core product. And you could choose Thursday Night Football or another form of entertainment. But if you're a media company, sports is irreplaceable and invaluable. And the value proposition to a media company is far greater than it would be to a retail product.
Now, Bruin has the rights to NFL Game Pass. The league is also pursuing NFL Plus. What's your take on the league pursuing its own streaming platform?
I think it's quite bright, you know, because they're trying to reach the youth. They're also, you have in the mix here, the young consumers are where the streamers are. So if I'm the NFL, I'm trying to reach that audience, whether it's through NFL Plus, will be my, someday the Sunday Ticket package, Amazon. Those are critical consumers to grow the game. So I think it's smart to try and have as many touch points with the consumer, particularly the young consumer. It's really good. And then internationally, it's tough to watch NFL all around the world. And so, of course, NFL Game Pass really serves that purpose to feed people NFL content, you know, for us, in our case, in 181 countries.
So what does the league making these changes, working towards this evolution, what does that mean for Game Pass and for your business?
Well, for us, we're outside the U.S., so I think there's it's a different approach. Game Pass International is really a growth engine for international. It's you're marketing to consumers one person at a time. So I think international and domestic are quite different, and different strategies, different objectives. Right. Game Pass International is a very important part of the marketing outside the United States for the NFL, as is NFL Plus in the U.S., but you have more resources inside the U.S. and less outside the U.S.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us ahead of a big football weekend here in the United States. Bruin Capital founder and CEO George Pyne, appreciate you stopping by. We're going to continue our coverage of sports streaming Monday. Marie Donahue, Amazon Vice President of Global Sports Video, just 4 days out from Thursday Night Football, taking center stage. She's going to join us to talk about Prime Video and this big bet that Amazon is making. Plus, tonight, Bloomberg premiering Bloomberg's The Lineup. Kaylee Lines and Damian Sassauer are going to give you the latest on betting trends and talk about the biggest players across the industry. 7 p.m. Eastern, Fridays. Coming up, all things NFTs and tech with Proof Collective co-founder and serial tech entrepreneur, Kevin Rose. That is next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said. Done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time now for our crypto report, and I want to take a look now at NFTs with Proof Collective, which recently announced a big raise, $50 million led by Andreessen Horowitz, participation also from 776, that's Alexis Ohanian's venture capital firm. I want to talk about what it all means for Collective's expansion plans with its co-founder and CEO, Kevin Rose, who of course also founded the social news site Dig back in the day. He was a general partner at Google Ventures, a longtime angel investor. He backed Twitter, Facebook, Square, and is the host of the Proof and Modern Finance podcast. He joins us now along with our crypto contributor, Shanali Bosick in New York. Kevin, welcome. Shanali, take it away.
Kevin, I'm really curious.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're really curious here because obviously there has been this crypto winter, yet you were able to raise a Series A here in a world where NFT collections at large have been very volatile this year. What is it that makes an NFT collection valuable, and how much of it has to do with the community rather than the assets themselves?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is certainly the community and the strength of that community and, you know, how active and engaged they are in what you're building. Because, you know, as a company, we're just a handful of people. And really, it's how we deputize our community to go out and build on our behalf that makes us so powerful. So I think what you're seeing with what we're doing at Proof with Moonbirds is really the birth of kind of a decentralized brand in which the community has the keys to the castle. They get to be the ones to go out and decide how to use the IP and how to monetize it. It's a complete flip of, say, something like a Disney, where they're the ones that hold the IP close to their own. They hold it internally and they never really release it. So they are the ones that get to monetize the entire thing. And this is a chance to completely flip that model.
Flipping the model, but what about what it means relative to other NFT collections? What sets apart Moonbirds, for example, from the Bored Apes?
Yeah, I mean, I think you really have to find your community. Like every community inside of the world of PFPs, these profile photo pictures, they have different vibes and different kind of core tenets of who, what they stand for. We are always this idea of this love of an appreciation of art, this curation with a point of view. That's kind of what we've always done at Proof. We're not about getting into this crazy market of the muddy waters of flipping NFTs or how to make a quick 5X. And we're long-term builders. I mean, we've been doing this for 20 plus years in terms of who we are as entrepreneurs, having built many businesses over that period of time. And, you know, many of the members on our team are ex-Google. And so it's really a level of maturity that's coming to the table here to build this business. And I think people have a lot of confidence in who we are as that team. You know, this is largely an anonymous space where there's a lot of products and some great projects actually that launch with anonymous founders. But in a world where there's this uncertainty and there can certainly be sometimes what they call rug pulls where you never know if a project just disappears, 6 months later, we've kind of put everything out there and said, we're serious about this. We're going to go raise venture capital and we're going to be a team that's going to stick around for many years to come.
You know, critics also say here that if you look at what NFTs are, to what extent is there utility behind them? How do they go beyond just being digital art and into something that has a broader purpose? What do you say to critics like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a very new idea and concept for people to wrap their head around, where for the very first time, you actually have and collect something that is a core piece of ownership of a project. So oftentimes, as these projects become more and more popular, value accrues back to these NFTs as collectible pieces of art. And that is different in that if you're dealing with a traditional media company, you're just a consumer. Like if you go out and you watch a Star Wars movie or you go and you somehow participate in that experience, yes, they're great media experiences, but there's nothing really to walk away with there that is a part of that project. And here you have these different members of the community coming together and taking this artwork that they actually own and going off and doing very creative things with it. So they can figure out when and how they want to monetize it. They can remix it. And you're deputizing a community of brand builders to go out there and blow this up and get it more and more exposure in new and creative ways that you never thought possible as a centralized organization. So the bet here really is to say, we think there's a different way to build a media business here, and it's not one where it's a handful of people in a boardroom that get to make the decisions, but it's really empowering the community to go out and do big and bold things on our behalf. And we're just kind of the ones that are making sure that the business is running and that we are delivering solid products in conjunction with our community members.
Kevin, given you're so steeped in the earlier social iterations of the internet, for our viewers who are less crypto native, can you explain why you think blockchain technology and Web3 really is the future and what happens to these social platforms like Facebook and Twitter that we all know now in this future? Do they continue to exist?
Yeah, it's a good question because there is a lot of certainly the Web3 environment and community behind it are a lot more privacy focused. And there is certainly this idea that we can come in and reinvent a lot of the technology that's underpinning a lot of these businesses in a way that doesn't put the consumer as the product, that doesn't sell their eyeballs, that doesn't sell their personal information. So that's a really exciting new direction to move the web. And it's early days. So what we're building here is kind of the infrastructure and underpinnings of all of that. And you'll see that be spread across a whole series of different categories. So art and digital collectibles being the obvious one here with NFTs and rewriting the way that artists get paid with royalties enforceable by the blockchain and just a lot of really exciting things that are happening there, which I certainly believe that it's pretty clear now that the future of a lot of art is going to go in the form of NFTs. But certainly there's going to be the same reimagination and reinvention of classic Web2 properties in a way that puts the consumer in more control and gives them a piece of that upside, so they're not just a product of a big a massive like Fortune 500 company, but really they are actually part of that ownership via tokens or via NFTs. So it's a pretty exciting new change.
you know, there's a lot about to happen in the next couple of weeks with the Ethereum merge. I guess my question is, do you think the gatekeepers of the internet today, Meta, Twitter, Google, do they survive in this new world? Or is all of this new technology a major threat to them?
Certainly, there are going to be companies like any major shift, like we saw with Web 1.0 going to Web 2.0 or whatever it may be. There are companies that get it, that understand it at a core level. I would put, Jack Dorsey in that camp, right? Because all the things that they've done at Square and everything they're building at Block, I think that's they're an amazing group of innovators. They understand blockchain technology at a very, very core level. There are others that are playing in this realm, meaning that if you take a look at Instagram, how they embraced and enabled NFTs now to be displayed. But it's more like a bolt-on and not really a retooling and rethinking of the product at its core. I don't think long-term the kind of bolt-on, we're just going to do this because it's the hot thing of the week, I don't think that's going to play well. And it's really not the dramatic change that consumers, at least in the Web3 space, are looking for. And so for me, it's going to be a lot of new native companies built from the ground up that tackle these problems. So it's going to be brand new businesses that are being built right now that will probably in the next 2 to 3 years really emerge as some of the early winners. And so, you know, I would say the reason we went out and raised this round of financing with Andreessen is that we believe there's a better way to do a media business, and that really puts the consumers in control of this of these assets and really gives them a way to experience and collect digital collectibles that have never been done before. So that's what's exciting for us. But that's just one vertical of probably 15 that the blockchain is going to address and reimagine over the next few years.
Fascinating. Well, it's great to hear about what you're doing now, Kevin Rose, CEO and co-founder of Proof Collective, along with our very own Shanali Basak. Thank you for stopping by. Other stories we are watching. Tesla is considering building a battery-grade lithium refinery on the Gulf Coast of Texas. Company has filed a newly public application for tax breaks with the Texas Comptroller's Office, calling the proposed facility the first of its kind in North America. The electric car maker is also evaluating a site in Louisiana. And Amazon sellers are bracing for a bleak holiday shopping season. This has inflation-bitten consumers are curbing their spending. Many merchants who sell more than half of the goods on the Amazon website are concerned they're going to be forced to cut prices to move a mountain of unsold inventory. This is an abrupt change from the previous 2 years when sellers were scrambling to get enough products into Amazon warehouses to meet all of that pandemic-fueled demand, despite chronic shortages that let them jack up prices. That's a trend we're going to continue to follow. And that does it for this Friday edition of Bloomberg Technology Monday. Really excited to have Marie Donahue, Amazon's Vice President of Global Sports Video, to talk about their $13 billion foray into the NFL. And tonight, Bloomberg premiering the lineup, Kaylee Lyons and Damian Sassauer. We're going to give you the latest data on betting trends and talk to the biggest players in the industry. 7 p.m. Eastern. This is Bloomberg. Have a wonderful weekend.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.